I can shut down all my social media channels tomorrow. I'm not attached to them at all. Yeah. I'm in love with the process. The biggest lesson that I learned from my first manager was, if I can't trust you, it doesn't matter how smart you are. I do feel that people need direction. My point of view in life is that 99% of the world wants to be led. They don't want to be managed. My 30s, all of my 30s, was just jam-packed. Jam-packed. And I loved my calendar. You're leading, you're running a startup, you have people coming in, there is high visibility. I cannot do that. I just cannot. I cannot be breathing down upon people's neck saying, who are you, what are you doing, when are you doing, what are you doing. I often tell Vidur as well, like, I'm your father. I don't know what this is.
Ankur, what are you going to scribble on this?
I have no idea. I'm just playing with the colors right now. Yeah? This is so cool. Actually, so cool. I love the setup. It's just so inviting. And
The idea is to make every guest spend time doing something random and fun while also having a conversation.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Yeah, the other day, I don't know who said, there's an old Biswa stand-up thing which came up, and he says that we all learned how to draw scenery.
Ah, scenery.
Well, those two hills, beach
makes sun.
Upar do birds. Oh, ek palm tree
aur ek nadi.
And that house, nadi, ek house, do window, ek door.
Exactly.
We all do the same thing.
Pura desh sirf aise banata hai. Exactly. We all do the same thing.
And it's the most like, why is a palm tree next to a mountain? All that stuff you don't get.
No.
I think that's a great point to start. How were you as a kid? How was young Ankur?
Young Ankur was... You would perhaps know of this. Do you remember this TV serial called Kyunki Saas Bhi Kabhi Bahu Thi?
Of course.
It's seminal in television history. Usme Mihir hota tha. And Mihir,
the Mihir was...
was
recast in between.
It was recast. Marwar gaya. Exactly, exactly. You know more than you should. So, and Mihir was this quintessential modern age Ram. Hey, this never do wrong, love everybody, respect everybody, blah, blah, blah. I was jokingly called Mihir in school because I was this kid who would never want to get into trouble or thought that trouble was bad. I had these very clear definition of what is a vice, what is a good deed, what's a good person, what's a bad person, and so on. And I was frankly quite stuck up in this moralistic high ground of what is right and wrong in life. Largely defined by my parents because that's the way they saw the world. And a lot of the indoctrination that happened around this is the right way to live life. So I was studious, never smart enough to get like the top rank, but top five mein aa jata tha.
He has a little more potential.
PTA
meeting.
Har PTA meeting mein.
Thoda aur kar le.
Thoda sa aur kar lenge to kuch ho sakta hai. Wo kuch kabhi nahi aaya, but main thoda sa aur karna bhi nahi chahta tha. And always the love of the teacher. And it's like, you know, isko dekho. Like I was like the Sharma ji ka beta in Delhi, but not being the Sharma ji ka beta. That was it. And I think I grew up knowing that education is the only way out in life. There is nothing else that can happen. Business was not looked favorably at because didn't come from a business background at all. So chasing profit was like a sin. Chasing money was a sin. Thinking of money was a sin while you needed it for everything that you wanted to do in life. Education was the only way out. You worked your way through the ladder. There was just hard work and nothing else that would get you there. And no shortcuts. Just no shortcuts. And keep everyone happy while you're at it. And so never rock the boat. Never do anything that you shouldn't be doing. Never say anything directly. Mufat nahi banna hai. Jo tum andar soch rahe ho, wo agar tum kisi ko bol doge, to then that's not the right thing kyunki unko thes pahunchegi. And so it was just very cushioned world of what is right and wrong and how things are.
I think of that time a lot. I think as I've gotten older and I've had kids, I've thought about that time a lot more. So I was... quintessential, half of my family were doctors, half of were engineers. Doctors stayed in India, engineers went to America. Very like straight up.
Straight up. Playbook,
And because of the family of doctors and dad, like my family was and still is like a multi-specialty hospital, right? Her specialization, you'll find one person. So as a kid, for me, like medical treatment was like, okay, just go to this uncle, this aunt, this grandfather. But I have, like for me, it was like, you know, you can skim through just being smart. Like you're okay being above average, being average. You didn't have to put in that much more effort. Why do you want to put in that much more effort was the thing, because you felt like, Why do I have to study so much?
Did you like studying though?
Depended on the subject
though.
So for me it was, so computers something I gravitated towards very early on, as soon as I got it. And I was like, I want to code, I want to do this stuff. You get me near math and I want to run away. But I did engineering eventually, it's the thing. But I was curious about things that weren't necessarily taught in school. And
interesting.
When you're curious about a lot of things and people don't give their answers, you go looking for it. Today you have the internet, but we didn't have, I mean, I still remember the dial-up modem sound, which when it, yeah, it came in, yeah. But it became that, it became about that, how do I find ways to follow my curiosity, find things I'm interested in. So I was interested in pop culture, interested in music. I was interested in how, you know, films were made. Mm. That was my whole space of curiosity. What are you curious about?
I was curious about the space. That was the only thing I know about. Oh. That's the only I think this was class 7th or 8th. I think it was 7th. Mm. On my birthday, my Masi, she gifted me this book called The Big Book of Space, which was actually a big book. It was like twice this size or something. And it had everything from the solar system to the galaxy to the last page was also about aliens. Mm. And so it covered the entire span of it. And I just fell in love. I remember just reading it over and over and again, imagining myself to be an astronaut, what it would be to be outside. And television that time was restricted. This was
Doordarshan.
This was just Doordarshan, right? Yeah. DD1, DD2, Metro, that was as far as you could go. So there was nothing out there. And science fiction was hardly anything. Yeah. So books were your escape, if you will. And I remember reading this book called Contact. I don't know if you've seen the movie Carl Sagan. That was a movie. That was my Dilwale Dulhania Le Jayenge movie before Dilwale Dulhania Le Jayenge happened to me. It just stuck. And then around 9th or 10th is when X-Files came.
Mm.
Oh, and we didn't have cable television. Mm. So for me, X-Files was about going to a friend's place to watch it.
Mm.
And the friend and me, we shared this love for aliens and we believed that the government is hiding something. We believed that Area 51 existed. We believed that the Roswell incident
in 1948.
I still believe
it's there. I still believe.
Of course, 100% is there. Now, Roswell happened in 1948. We have been contacted and blah, 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 blah. So with that belief, him and I jammed on it. And it was just, it was to begin with stars and then this conviction that we were not alone.
You know, the points in life, and I'm sure that happened to us as you grew older, and I want to tap into the astronomy one and the space one and all, and you going to the US, but not the journey of what you were going there to study. But there's this point where, you know, we put ourselves on a track and we say, this is what I'm going to be doing. This is what I'm, you know, this is my passion and this is what I'm going towards. And sometimes that when that passion starts gravitating towards profession, something clicks, right? We're like, okay, this is not what I thought it would be. Was that the click that happened?
Oh, 100%. 100%. When you read a big book of space, it's like you feel like you're the astronaut drifting and that's all that you got to do. Yeah. It's like so many people want to start a restaurant because all that they visualize is, oh my God, the food coming in and people just go, but no one's looking at the kitchen where the thing is like, ban raha hai,
and it's like, low. I mean, if you've been in the kitchen and I have friends who work in the F&B industry, that is not a job.
I wouldn't wish a restaurant upon any of my friends, perhaps not even my enemies. There's this fascinating article, blog rather, which I read, I think about 7 or 8 years back, the title of which is, The World Has a Fascinating Amount of Detail.
Hmm.
And the blog simply was that from a distance, everything looks really simple. It looks very non-complicated. But only when you get into it do you realize that everything in life has this fascinating amount of detail.
Mm.
And only when you begin to appreciate, admire, and be okay with the detail do you actually click with it or not.
Yeah.
And it just hit me when I was a student of astronomy that the level of detailing that it required for me to live with that was not something that enamored me. It wasn't. Like, I love to be on the surface. I wanted to be called a NASA space scientist, but not have anything to do with what it takes to be a NASA space scientist.
Yeah.
I was like, I just show up one day. Like, kahan jana hai? Mars? Yeah. Okay, Mars jana hai. Like, but not go through any of the detailing that is required. And that just wasn't the case. And the exact opposite of that is this weekend, the Saturday, Sunday, my team and I, we had a two-day workshop where we, for the first time in 3 years since we started, we looked at every single thing that we do as a process. And we run the company as a process-oriented piece. And I love it that way because that's my innate personality. So we looked at every single platform, every single process, everything that goes on and how it goes on and so on. And at the end of it, it was like a whiteboard like that. And I stared at it and it was just one platform. And not even one platform, one... It was YouTube long format content. That was it. And it had filled up the entire whiteboard with just steps that it takes to publish one YouTube long format content of about 20 minutes. And I looked at that and I was like, this is a piece of art. It looks like art to me because at the end of it, nobody knows the amount of detailing that has gone into making this happen. But I just love pulling it through every single day, day in and day out, 3 times a week now, blah, blah, blah. And that was the exact opposite to what I felt like a astronomy student to what I feel with content creation or for that matter, even running a startup.
Yeah.
That I'm just in love with the amount of detail it takes to win.
Yeah. I think when I think back on the time when I felt like that, and it's one of my earliest ones, right? I always wanted to work in television. I'd rather always wanted to work in MTV. My dream in life, wanted something with MTV one day, right? So, and I go to film school and I was like, direction felt like, oh, whatever, you're saying something on camera, do it. And I wasn't great at it. I understood content. So like, but I remember going to MTV and at one of my, and you're sitting on the edit for the first time because by then edits, like you couldn't get edit machines easily. Yeah. College had like, you could maybe get like 1 hour in a week if you were lucky in the college edit machine. We're in a media school, right? Because machines were expensive. They had two, so all batches, you could have two machines. So, okay. And so when I go to MTV, and they're doing it. And I remember once we're sitting on it, I was doing something and Rimit was, so Raghu, Rodi's Raghu Raji, Raghu was my first boss. And he walked in and he said, that cut there is off. And I was like, I don't understand why it was off. He said, you've done a crossfade. You need to pull that crossfade back 2 frames. And I'm like, there's so much, there were 24, 25 frames depending on what you're shooting on or rather exporting on. I'm like, how do you know that? He said, try it. I couldn't notice the difference. But for years now, I'm in tuned. And I realized that till someone points out that the detail, you might notice it. Nobody else will notice it. Like you said, you put that whole thing out.
True.
Not everybody will. I think there'll be a finite number of people who notice just did the sound effect hit right at the right moment?
True.
Did the plan go exactly as per this thing? So it's a lot more about your own satisfaction.
Yeah.
Which is why you're doing it. If you're doing it for someone else, then eventually you'll be like, you can. Like for me, direction was that. Direction was never fine-tuned. For me, the edit was that. Like, can you do it that way? Or put a script in, get the line in the right point. But I've realized over time that it's all personal satisfaction.
Yeah,
if you've gotten satisfaction out of the creation process, then it doesn't matter if someone's seen it or not.
That's so true. That is so true. And I have such a massive amount of respect for editors because that's precisely the kind of detail that I cannot get into. Yeah. Like I can't imagine how raw gets finished at the hands of somebody's creative genius. It's like magic to me. It is genuinely like magic to me. So
now let me give you a insight of where I learned editing. Because that'll give context. So when you're shooting reality TV our time, there were 7 to 10 cameras shooting people in shows. And you're getting all that footage together. You're lining it up. You're then cutting off the randomness. You're trying to build a story out of... So for us, it was like taking like hours and hours and days worth and bringing it down to like a 30-minute episode. In hindsight, I'm like, now this feels like...
Exactly. This is like child's play. Wow, I can't even imagine that.
You know, you spoke about process-oriented. That's something which really comes out with you.
was there a point where you're like, okay, there are some processes you feel like, okay, maybe I'm being too rigid about this. Do I want to open it up? Do you have those moments?
Oh, I have these moments all the time. I am, so I love this quote by Naval Ravikant because that stands for so much of what I would love to do in life and try to do in life. Impatient with action, patient with results. My process, goal and objective is to do whatever we know has to be done. And that will mean we will skip some things that we are not aware of. So the unknown unknowns. And that's perfectly fine. Like, is my work ever error-free? No, it's not. But was the error noticed before it went in? No. Which is why it went in. Unless, of course, it was a choice. Like, a lot of times I'm shooting my YouTube videos and I will say fumble on a word or pronounce it miscorrect. And like,
now it's a part of your content.
Exactly.
Now everyone looks forward to when his uncle going to fumble. So there'll be a funny point at that point.
There will be. There will be. And you know, I'll play with it because I like playing with it and that makes me just be myself. But is there, say, an error in the subtitle or error in the edit or some shade and whatnot? Knowingly, it will never go through. Unknowingly, it will. And we will then own up and make that happen. And once that is out, I wouldn't fixate myself on what comes out of it. So patient with the results. It could take, I'm super patient. Like, it can take whatever it takes. Whether it's 6 months, 6 years, I couldn't care less because I'm enjoying the process. So I'll try and build a process where I fall in love with the process. And if I fall in love with the process, then till the time I'm in love with the process, I'll continue doing it, irrespective of the results. And the day I'm out of love with the process, I'll stop doing it, irrespective of the results. And that's why I often say I can shut down all my social media channels tomorrow. I'm not attached to them at all. I'm in love with the process, which is how we create them, how we think about them, the feedback that we get, what we do about that, blah, 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 blah. And that gets me up, but not the outcome.
And I feel being that way is super important to create content, especially amongst other things, because otherwise you're stuck on it. Like,
So it's a good question because... so. One of my closest friends, Akhilesh, he and another friend, Ankur, the three of us are really close and we have a WhatsApp group. So he was sharing something recently that he read on Twitter and he asked this question, is micromanagement a necessary trait for success? Kyunki almost everybody that we see who is at the top percentile of success is in some shape or form a micromanager. Whether it's Jeff Bezos, whether it's Elon Musk, you pick up anyone, even in non-business, like whether it's, say, politics or it's even social impact. They're anal about something. Creative people, more so, like micromanage. Seinfeld ka wo jo interview hai, like, the reason why Seinfeld became a success is because I looked at every single line and made sure it was funny. My reaction to that was, micromanagement, in my opinion, is necessary for success. However, you can either micromanage people or you can micromanage systems. A lot of people end up micromanaging people, which is a trait. I admire that. I cannot do that. I just cannot. I cannot be breathing down upon people's neck saying, "Hua ki nahi hua, kya kar rahe ho, kab kar rahe ho, ye wagera wagera." But I certainly micromanage systems. I love micromanaging systems. I'll design a process. I'll set up a tool that measures that process, makes it compliant. And then my only and only job will be to just ensure that that compliance is happening. Whether it translates into a people being micromanaged indirectly or a process or another tool or another agency, I couldn't care less. I'm like, ye kaam is samay tak ho jana chahiye tha. Aur ye tool bol raha hai ki nahi hua hai. Iska zimmedar jo bhi hai, wo haath kade karke apna kaam kar le. And agli baar nahi hona chahiye. And I will not speak to the person and keep pinging them and so on. I'll just speak to the system or the process. And if it's not working or it's breaking down a lot despite different people, I'll change the process. If it's working and it's only people dependent, then I will eventually change the person. But I'll never micromanage people. I'll just manage my systems.
I feel it also comes to the fact that you can't micromanage everything anyway.
Of course.
And so here... my take on micromanaging has always been that I'm a micromanager by trait. But I'm a micromanager about the most random things. So I will never... The bigger stuff will always be like, okay, it's macro, wide point of view, kuch chal raha hai, chal raha hai. I will micromanage like, okay, this word in this caption could change. Or like, maybe we can do something. So it's... And I feel that way you're also like satisfying that part of your mind that wants to micromanage. Because think micromanaging people is a tricky one.
Yeah, it is.
Also, like, you're the other person might feel restricted in their own freedom of doing
that. Of course.
And that never, it's never sad. You don't want, because you don't want to be micromanaged by anyone.
Yeah.
So why would you
do that to someone else?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I do feel that people need direction.
Mm.
My point of view in life is that 99% of the world wants to be led.
Mm.
They don't want to be managed.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference, but a subtle one in that. Leadership is not about managing, but it is certainly about laying an agenda and making sure that everyone's organized towards the agenda. Elon Musk beautifully said that the company is a sum product of everyone in the organization acting as a vector. And if you remember vectors, vectors are not just about the speed, they're also about the direction. Two vectors in opposite directions cancel each other, even though they may be at the same speed and so on. So if you have two people in a team,
you are that person in college who I would run away from saying this guy knows all the answers because I know none of them.
But it's just such a, well, I mean, it's a very geeky representation of what a company is, but I love it because it just makes things simple for me.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how fast you're running if you're running opposite in my direction.
Yeah.
And that's what the company does. So everyone, doesn't matter how fast they are, if everyone's running in the same direction, it always adds up.
Yeah.
If everyone's running in opposite directions or worse, in random directions, then individual speeds don't matter.
Yeah.
And so often we see that, particularly in large companies. I've been part of one large company and it's like, har koi apna apna kuch kar raha hai. And they are busy AF.
Yeah.
Like, saans lene ka waqt nahi hai. But none of that is moving the needle for the company.
Yeah.
And I don't know, kis cheez mein busy ho? Bas busy hai. Kuch kar rahe. And that then becomes the counterproductive way of thinking about it.
And that also happens because, you know, when companies start off, they're fluid. And then we build structures because they get bigger because you need structure.
Yeah.
And after a point of time, the structure starts driving the work rather than the work itself.
True.
And then you get large enough where everything is about structure.
True.
But there is a way, and I'm going back to micromanagement because it's a great point, right? Is that if you're looking at it from the fact that, okay, this person can do this, I don't have to tell them how to do it.
Mm.
All I have to ensure is that the broader stuff is well oiled in the machinery.
True.
And I'm doing right by that person by not treating them like a machine, but treating them like a human being. And then everything else works.
Yes.
It's that machine and human being thing is where we get it wrong. Because I think that's the whole difference between a leader and
a manager.
A manager often treats you like you're a machine.
Correct. Ye kar do, ye kar do, ye kar do, ye kar do. Yeah. And keep fine tuning that.
Yeah.
Not getting to that broader ways. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's been my experience.
What have been your learnings as someone who's led teams, led organizations and stuff? What has been your...
That people are people and not data points on an Excel sheet. We are unpredictable. We are biased. We are emotional. We are driven by acknowledgement. We are driven by intrinsic motivation of what we care about the most. And that keeps changing for us. And we very rarely recognize that. And that's why, particularly in the startup world, there is this fascination and almost fetish around scale. How does this thing scale? Scale kaise hoga? And scale is do more with less.
Hmm.
Do more with less. And frankly, that's audacious. Our country needs it. That's the only way where innovation happens. So you challenge the boundaries, every condition that has been imposed on you as such. But one thing, in my opinion, that I think should never scale is leadership. It should not become easier to lead people when you're big. It should become harder.
Yeah.
So if I meet somebody who's like, oh, mere paas ab bahut badhiya team hai and ab to bahut aasan ho gaya, like, ye gaya.
Yeah.
Company bhi gayi. Sell the stock. Because leadership by design has to get harder as you go up.
Yeah.
Because leadership is individual. It doesn't scale. It is personalized. And that's the biggest lesson that I've learned. Don't lead by a one-size-fits-all approach. Don't lead by who you are, because one couldn't care less.
Yeah.
You have to lead by who they are and what they would want. And if you give them what they want and be very clear in what you want from them, that's it. it's unbelievable how things get done.
Yeah.
Which is part of the conversation we had at the workshop again. And I was telling my team, the biggest lesson that I learned from my first manager was, if I can't trust you, it doesn't matter how smart you are. I love the quote. And it stayed with me because everything changed in how I saw people and how I saw my relationships with them, irrespective of whether they were colleagues, my team members, my peers or whatnot. If I can't trust you, it doesn't matter how smart you are. So everything has to start from trust. I have to build an environment of trust. I have to make it easy for people to trust me and make it obvious for how I would trust them.
Yeah.
And then just let it be. And if that happens, communication, the need of it goes down, the necessity of it goes down, the criticality of it goes down. You just know things will get done.
Were you always someone who was process-oriented?
Yeah. I don't remember a time I wasn't, so I would say yes. And I certainly, it's an unfortunate answer because that seems to suggest I was born with it and people can't have it, which is certainly not true. People can build on it. And I've certainly improved a lot in how my process orientation has been. But I distinctly remember I was almost always like this. Came naturally. Yeah.
How are you as a parent?
I'm completely the opposite. I'm not process driven at all. My wife and I have the biggest conflict around that is she's very methodical. She's very process driven. She's very matter of fact. And my approach both towards Vidur, our 11-year-old, and Uzma, our 5-year-old, is there are some things that they will learn even if we don't teach them.
Correct. I agree.
तो वो सिखाने की जरूरत नहीं है. हमें उनको एक playbook देनी है. A playbook that they would know, pretty much like the one you were suggesting, where in moments of doubt, they have a reference guide.
Yeah.
That's it. We don't have to teach them how to brush their teeth, take a bath, get ready, speak a certain language. Because there is no way that they can survive in this world if they don't know that.
Yeah.
So they will, by merit or by force or by just the survival instincts that we are born with, figure that thing out.
Mm.
But they wouldn't figure it out what it would be to, say, treat a human.
Mm.
They wouldn't know how to react if their friends started mocking them for being friends with somebody else.
Mm.
They wouldn't know what it would be to react, how to react if their friends were like, oh, the teacher is a duffer. He or she doesn't know anything.
Mm.
We will figure it out. Mm. Or anything like that. I'm just making this shit up. So if we can give a playbook or a reference guide, that's our role.
Yeah.
So it's not to be prescriptive. It's not to be micromanaging. You micromanage the systems and people will then eventually micromanage themselves. That's at least my belief. But that does mean that I am fairly lenient with like, koi farak nahi padta. Like that's my favorite line, koi farak nahi padta. And she would often say, kis cheez ka farak padta hai? Like what really matters? And I'm like, you know what? The truth is very few things in life matter. We make them important. But very few things in life matter. What matters to me? What matters to me is my health, the health of my family, my thinking ability. And frankly, that's it. I don't have a fourth. I really don't have a fourth. Like my biggest worry or fear in life is losing my loved ones or losing my ability to think. And that then makes it very easy for me to be a parent where I genuinely think ki ज्यादातर चीजों से फर्क नहीं पड़ता.
बट एक्चुअली डज दिस रियली मैटर इज आई हैव अ फ्लिप थिंग. आई रियलाइज दैट द ओल्ड फ्रॉम द टाइम यू बिकम अ पेरेंट यू एक्चुअली रियलाइज व्हाट थिंग्स मैटर मोर देन यू एवर डिड. बिकॉज़ टिल देन यू नो देयर वर ऑलवेज लाइक रैंडम थिंग्स यू वांटेड एंड यू स्टिल वांट रैंडम थिंग्स. आई डोंट थिंक यू विल एवर गिव अप ऑन दैट. बट एज यू ट्राइंग टू टेल समवन एल्स और अदर टीच समवन एल्स व्हाट शुड मैटर टू देम, you realize that you also should, you're getting a revision course in life. Loko, one second. Like I tell my mom, like, I finally get it. Okay. I, that time I'm like, why are you telling me to do this? I do this. I'm like, oh, I get it. But
some of the points you spoke about, right? Just the things that they have to deal with. It's all about navigating human equations, relationships, dealing with emotions, dealing with how, like the other day we were having this conversation about how, I didn't realize how early friendships are made and broken in kids' lives. And my daughter's like 6, and I mean, I've already heard many times, like, she's not a friend anymore, this one's playing with someone else, this one's moved away. I'm like, and then this point where classes were shuffled together in her school, yeah. And then all her friends were in the other section, and she was like, I'm like, now, there's no right answer for this. But there's always like, okay, this is how you deal with it, maybe. And so the more I tell her these things, I am finding ways for me to deal with it myself. Which is why I say that being a parent has many, many, many added benefits for the period of time when your kids are young. Older, I don't know. Huh. So I can't talk about that yet. But have you seen yourself change?
Yeah, yeah. Certainly. Absolutely. I see a lot of... I question a lot of things of what is, as you rightly pointed out, even important or not, necessary or not, should be prescribed to somebody else or not. And then, of course, in that prescription / mentoring / guidance / conversation / talk, you begin to realize a lot of things for your own self, as you mentioned. So that's wonderfully additive. I think the biggest difference that has happened to me as a parent is this not so popular opinion, which, by the way, I've never shared with my wife. So if you're hearing it, I still love you. I don't think there is any other love except that of a parent and a child. I don't think adults love each other. I'd like to believe I love my wife, and I'd like to believe that she loves me. But I think there is a layer of other variables that we misinterpret as love. And it could be anything. Like when you're young, it could be physical intimacy. Yeah. When you're old, it could be companionship. When you are somewhere in the middle, it could be even ambition or fueling it, whatnot.
Yeah.
So we call it love, but at the end of it, I genuinely today think that love is only what happens between a parent and a child.
It's one of the purest forms of it.
It is just unconditional. Yeah. It is unconditional. Yeah. It is... Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it is crazy how unconditional it is and how it happens in a second. Like, in a second, you were not that person. There was this fantastic joke that I, not a joke, it was a stand-up, and he was saying it, meant it to be funny, but it's real life. It's like, with your wife, or for that matter, partner, you would take a bullet for her. Mm. Right? So you would die for her. Mm. The second your child is born, you would kill for that child.
Yeah, I've seen the same one, yeah.
You would kill.
Yeah.
You would become a murderer for that thing that was just inside the womb of your partner until the second back has just come out.
Yeah.
And you instantly become from a defender to this attacker. And like, main jaan le lunga kisi ki agar isko kuch karne diya. It's crazy.
And it's also like, you don't realize how much it changes the way you live your life. I have lots of friends who don't have kids, and they're like, we see how much it has changed just the person you are and the way you live life. And some of them are making choices about, you know, them having kids or not. But one of the things I've told them is that you have chosen to bring this person into this world. Now you got to make the most of the period of time when they're around, because they're not going to be around you all. And eventually they'll do what we all did. We all left home and we went in our own directions. But it's also pure, I feel, because it's like when you tell a kid saying, no, but you have to do this and you owe me this much. You owe me this much. Kid, I didn't ask to be. You got me, no. So this unnatural demands of like, no, I've got you, so you have to do this is a thing. But I've also realized the fact that I do have to, it's very weird. People don't believe this. I am actually the strict parent at home. I am the person who can say no and put my foot down and be very stern. And everybody else outside my house does not believe this.
Wow.
But I can stand there and watch someone cry and leg roll. I'm like, no. That's what it is today. And I feel it comes from the fact that I know that game. I've played that game with that
kid throwing a tantrum for so long as a kid, I'm like, I know what you're doing. Exactly. You don't teach me this stuff. I have a master's degree in this right now.
So true. I often tell Vidur as well, like, main tumhara baap hu. Mujhe pata hai ye kya hai. Whenever he's trying to be like, lie or be sly about something, it's like, it's just so obvious.
I also feel we're a generation of parents who have grown up aware of so many more things that go on in the world.
Yes.
That, which our parents didn't.
They didn't.
Like,
they did.
I've got away with, and I went through a period of my life when I was a smoker. Last period of time, parents didn't know. My dad was a smoker himself. So he's the one who caught me because he realized. I'm like, he's like, I know the trait. I know what. But people didn't know. And I could get away with a lot of. Now I'm like, he's also looking at a world where, you know, you mentioned screens. We have a generation of people who have grown up with screens, not just for them to consume, but to almost like capture everything which their life has. We did a lot of stuff as kids which nobody knows about, which nobody needs to know about. And we had so much more freedom to explore those. Now I can almost see a lens of, there might be a camera around.
Correct.
What will, ye log ka kya kahenge wala scenario now has been like multiplied 20, 30x.
And also the fact, I was reading this in a medical journal, that humans until this generation did not have a way of reliving the exact moment that they just lived.
Mm.
It's never happened before in human history.
Yeah.
Before photography was invented, it never happened. And it only happened, let's say, you know, cave pe bana diya usne, no? Ye hamari pehli date thi, no? Yeah. It became like forever and ever, stone man and stone women hanging out. Photography came, but that was also delayed. It was like the developing and so khao wo sab karo. But never has it happened in the moment. And what do kids do today? They get themselves click, and the first thing they say is dikhao. Because they are reliving that moment. Yeah. And it was a fascinating journal article that said, we don't yet know what are the ramifications of this.
Mm.
Because it does have an emotional side effect that has still not been figured in its entirety. That there is a certain response we get within our body when we live a certain moment.
Yeah.
But we don't know what happens is if we relive that exact moment through another medium as instantly as it happens today.
Yeah.
Does it curb the emotions?
Mm.
Does it make it even higher? Does it elevate that feeling or does it depress it? Time will tell. Like, for all you know, just like smoking was advertised and promoted by doctors at some point of time, and as weird as banal as it sounds, there may be 20 years hence people saying, you know what, clicking a photograph and looking at it is prohibited.
Yeah. They let you carry phones around all the time.
Exactly. Like, it's a weird, weird place to be in.
It's, and I think about this often, right? Because I didn't understand the concept of being present till the pandemic happened. And as I started to consume stuff around, I'm like, because I've generally been this jittery person who, you know, that the person sits and you get irritated because they keep shaking. I am that person, right? I've always been that person. It's gone down now lately. And everybody knows that, you know that person, like that's happening. And I came across this concept because at some point you were at home, you had to figure out things you have to do.
Mm.
And it just spoke about the fact that, you know, that instant reaction to move on to the next thing, to react to it, you just need to kind of hold on to that. Like, this show's name came from that. It's like, literally, it's like, how do you kind of, and for me, it was a tough thing to do. It still is. Like, I am often this person jumping on to the next thing. And Pooja, my wife, says that, you know, you're going to give me a headache because I'm at home. I'm saying, this is, I'm like that. My theory is that I throw a lot of paint on the wall and figure out what the pattern is. I'm not joining dots. I'm literally throwing paint at the wall most times. But the more I got into this whole, you know, understanding what being present was, I realized all it is just saying you move a lot slower and you tend to observe more. Like, I have realized I can observe more things now than I ever could because I'm just saying I don't have to move on to the next thing. I know I don't have to, you know, swipe to the next reel. And whenever I do that, the more you recognize that fact, your mind starts telling, okay, once again, you're going too fast because you've put on that switch or almost like a regulator in yourself. Because otherwise you can just... It's like the Matrix when you plug you in and...
Just clockwork. Next thing. And all of this is a recent development. If you really think about it, at best, what? 150, 200 years?
Yeah.
Of our 75,000 year of existence as a species, it's just last 200 years that we've got onto this treadmill of sorts before even the treadmill was invented.
Yeah.
Said ki next is kya? Like boredom was a thing, and boredom was the genesis of conversations, so of innovation, of everything. Taro ko dekh rahe hain, fir Newton bola acha chalo, ye sep kyun gir gaya mere sar pe?
I used to be this person. I still am sometimes. Lie down on the bed, look at the fan rotate. It sounds bizarre, but I actually made my daughter do this. I said, lie down, just imagine what this could be.
Yeah.
Learn to imagine through boredom. She's like, I don't want to be bored. I'm like, be bored. Hold on to it.
Yeah.
But I agree, there is a power to it, to being bored.
It is beautiful.
Just let your mind kind of go into any direction.
It is beautiful.
I remember watching a video of yours. I think you were speaking about what you do in your day, or week or whatever. And he said this thing about you, how you drink water in the morning. I was fascinated by how you described it. I know you fumbled there, just I remember it. He said, Gunguna pani.
Warm water.
I was like, so I do that. I do that warm water lemon thing in the morning. Because I went more like alkalized and let's do that and everything. But it just became a thing now. And when I saw how you described your day, you also made sure your day has a certain pace to it, which is not like, you're not going on like, okay, wake up, sixth gear, and then handbrake, and then go to bed, which is literally like how people should be living life most times. But, and you slowly moved towards that. Yes. Or was that always a...
No, it was a very, very slow departure from what I was doing earlier. Pehle toh, I remember my 30s, all of my 30s was just jam-packed. And I loved my calendar
to be like the blocks, like
literally exactly, meeting, and it was intense, and I loved that. The rush of it was just so addictive. The context switching was something that I was at least I used to think was something that I was brilliant at. You're leading, you're running a startup, you have people coming in, there is high visibility. And just like you, COVID happened. You just slowed down. And in that slowdown, I also started to have a conversation with myself that I've been through this over the last decade. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I wouldn't trade it for anything else. Yeah. It made me learn a lot more than I thought I would. But do I want to do this for another decade? Do I want to do it for another? But yeah, it was a wonderful time. And I think I loved that time so much more that I didn't want to ever go back to any other time. And then the question was, how do I design my life around this?
Yeah.
And thankfully, content happened, because content gives me that freedom. And the way that I'm running my entire business and startup now, it just is designed to not be fast-paced. It's designed to be patient. It's designed to take your time. It's designed to not choke. Not just me, but anyone in my team as well.
Yeah.
Long gestation period, nothing which is... Like one big call that we took on our content, for example, was we're not going to do anything that's trendy. Mm. Anything that we do would still apply if one were to watch it after.
You're not doing a video of two people chasing each other with their captions, which every the only thing you see on Instagram right now.
Yeah.
Or a Wes Anderson one.
Or ChatGPT kaise aapki life badal dega. None of that. You would create content that is time agnostic, which means you don't have to rush through things. There's no news to be published. There is no time to be, there's no trend dying phenomena in your business or in your area, which I love. And that's helped a lot.
You also, and I'm guessing this because I know you've briefly spoke about once, is that you do also like have a clear focus on your health.
Yes.
Saying that. Have a fitness regime, have a, just in terms of how you eat, everything else. Was that, again, like a getting older scenario?
Getting older scenario. The big tipping
point. You only realize that when you get older.
Only, right? It's like, you wish, one of my favorite questions is, which I ask my guests if I bring them in, is, if I were to give you $X million, and depending on the person, I would change the X for some 20 is a lot, for some 100 is a lot, for some 1 is a lot. So would you take X or would you go back to the age 20 knowing what you know today?
Mm.
And I would 100% take the second option. 100%. Like I would kill it if I was 20 and I knew all that I knew today. Like I would kill it. I would be ruling the world without wanting to rule the world because that's the wisdom I have. Don't want to rule the world. But it's just so much that you learn while just living life. I think if you are true to yourself where you don't take failures or obstacles as something that's trying to block you or something that could be potentially teaching you something new, it's fascinating. I was telling this to people. I love getting called out in public. Because
you started to call your own ads out, I've realized lately.
That's the best way of mitigating anything, right? It's like you start a book by saying this is the most useless purchase you'll ever make. It diffuses everything.
Yeah.
But
mutual fund is subject to market.
You would, when people call you out and you actually work on that and you fix it, you only get better.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. People call you out, you work on that, you fix it, you only get better. Why would you be scared of getting called out?
Yeah.
It's only your ego. It is just your ego, nothing else. So agar kahin se tumne us ego ko sambhal liya, control kar liya, the world will constantly keep telling you what you could do and could not do.
Yeah.
And just pick your battles, work on them, fix them, and you only get better.
Yeah. There's this author and researcher called Brené Brown, right? Brené Brown talks, and she's been a shame researcher for
vulnerability,
And she talks about shame in such a, like, first of all, in my head, I'm like, one second, there's a person who has researched shame for decades. I'm like, that's like, first of all, it blew my mind. Like, that's what she does. I mean, that's like a focus area.
It's fascinating.
But I feel like, and she spoke about shame in an interesting way. She said that shame, something is almost inbuilt from the time you're kids. Because when you're a kid, you are truly shameless at the beginning. Because you don't know, like my son is 8 months old. He has no concept of shame. Like, he will...
Susu what?
He fart in front of people, whatever, he'll smile. Right. Yeah. But at some point in time, you're almost like, it's you're ingrained in the one thing. If you do this,
shame.
So many of those shame were, even almost like those rhymes you would.
It was like, they were like this poetry and literature and structure and whatnot assigned to shame.
And as you get older, then you start also saying, at some point you become pride. It becomes pride when you are a teenager. I'm shameless about these things. And you want to say it, because, but you actually do care.
Correct.
We all have it.
Correct.
But how do you kind of flip that around from saying I'm shameless to saying I'm being vulnerable? There's a big like difference over there. And I feel that once you kind of figure a way to transition from one to the other, you're not doing it for show.
Yeah.
At least my interpretation always been that saying I'm shameless is means saying you're doing it for show.
Yeah.
Saying you're vulnerable means you're actually doing it because you are okay to just be vulnerable in front of people and just to be able to share. And I don't, this is whole like, wisdom angle. You mentioned wisdom as a word. And I feel it's that when you realize that why you do things aren't for other people, they're for yourself, is where when you feel okay, wisdom is kicking in. You know, the processor has finally processed all the information of our entire lives in that.
And who knows? Like I'm 43. How old are you?
I'm going to 41 now.
Yeah. So who knows? 10 years hence. Yeah. We may be dissing the same thing that we're talking about right now. And we'll be like, nahi, wo main tha.
Yeah.
But there's a new me now, which is a completely different view of the world and how the world has also changed. And you have certainly changed. So I love the fact that we keep evolving, keep changing.
Mm.
And I'm constantly surprised at how far along I have come in how I thought about the world and how I do today.
Yeah.
While still being okay at that point of time with my view of the world and still being okay with my point of view of the world today.
There's a question I've asked you before, but I have to ask it again because I ask every guest who comes here saying, if there's a piece of advice you got, and I know there was one which we've spoken of before, that made you almost like look at the way you are leading life and saying, one second, this it hit the spot.
Mm.
What would that be?
So I gave you one, which is around the trust piece, which really stayed with me. But I'll give you another one, which also stayed with me in a meaningful manner. And this was my conversation with Mohit Bhatnagar from Sequoia, who was, he was the lead investor for Nearby. And at some point of time, living through my 30s, ekdam clustered with meetings and leading people and initiatives and projects and blah, 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 like doing everything that I could. I went to him just as a general catch up and he heard me very patiently. And then he said, do whatever you want to do, Ankur, but never become part of the problem. And I'm like, sunne mein toh bahut achha lag raha hai, Mohit, bolna kya chahte ho? And he's like, you are today part of a lot of problems that you are trying to solve. You are, for example, at that point of time, like you are leading marketing, but you also want to solve for marketing. And the truth is, you can never solve for marketing if you are in marketing. You can always solve for marketing. You can only solve for marketing if you're outside of marketing. So get out of everything and then pick your battles. Don't become part of the problem. And I found that fascinating and, of course, very interesting and insightful at that point of time. And I've made this into almost a ritual where the purpose of any tool that I acquire, money for me is a tool. And the biggest purpose it serves is to abstract me from problems so that I can objectively look at something that is a problem and solve it.
Yeah.
So money for me is a tool of abstraction. An example, I would pay money to abstract myself from, say, the cooking process. And the minute I do that, I am objectively able to answer what is right and not right about the food that we eat. But if I am the one making the food, then I'll be emotionally involved.
Yeah, adjust kar lo.
Haan, kar lo. Na, ye to achha to mana hai. Aita kya? Itni mehnat kari hai. Do ghante lag gaye hai pyaas kaatne mein. Like, to, then you become all of this person, which is just the human tendency to do so.
Yeah.
But if you are detached from it, abstracted from it, you suddenly have power over the visualization of what that means. And it's true for everything else.
Yeah.
So money for me is just so important as a tool of abstraction.
Yeah.
And I often tell people it's not a way for me to acquire status or fame or anything like that. We're not materialistic as a family. We love traveling and that's where we only spend our money. But, oh boy, using money as a form of abstraction or as a tool or a mechanism for abstraction, 100%. I'll always do that. So that was great advice. It was brilliant advice at that point in time. Don't become part of the problem.
That's actually true. That also then pushes you away from being a micromanager.
Oh yeah, 100%.
You look at it from a broad angle. Exactly. You say, okay, 1 second. You're picking your, like, I think the picking your battles part is so important because we pick every battle. Right?
We
want to get into everything. So I will get in and I will solve this. And say, again, it's a whole like God complex, right? If I get into it, obviously it'll get solved. But say, no, 1 second, it's your problem. I will help you, but it's your problem to solve.
Exactly.
You spoke about going back in time. If you had to give a piece of advice to yourself as a kid, what would it be?
Aged?
Below 10.
Oh, below 10. Don't be so stuck up. Don't judge people. Don't think you are better than others. Don't think you know what is right or wrong. Your parents are not always right. They are humans first and parents later.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay. There's so many things that I would tell.
long list.
But mostly, I was really judgmental. I was really judgmental and I'm not proud of who I was. I used to, I don't know if I mentioned this in the previous session that we have on podcast, was I used to believe, and I kid you not, when I say believe, it's like a all caps believe. I used to believe that people who smoke and drink, which was your class at that point, were bad people, like evil.
Yeah.
Not in the sense that they were doing a bad thing. No. They were the ones who would bring the world to a shit place.
Uh-huh.
They were bad people.
They're not people who made bad choices.
No. They are bad people. They get up with bad intention. Wahi aage jaake murderer bante hain, rapist bante hain, terrorist bante hain. Wo gande log hain. Like, I had that idea. Like, kyunki this is a bad thing. It for me, smoking or drinking was not about making a choice or being influenced or something. It's like you consciously choose to do something that is bad. Because smoking is bad.
Yeah.
God, I was like, and I was just so stuck up. And I was just so, yeah, again, I said, I used to judge people. And like, kya hi karenge zindagi mein apni? पढ़ते लिखते हैं नहीं, हर वीकेंड पे पार्टी करते हैं, केबल टीवी लगा रखा है, स्टार वर्ल्ड देखते रहते हैं, बोल्ड एंड ब्यूटीफुल देखते हैं, डिस्कवरी चैनल नहीं देखते।
I watch Bold Beautiful. I'm totally the person you
would judge. We would not be friends.
If we met each other as kids.
I know, exactly.
I would be the person you would judge.
We would not be having this. My God, I'm sorry for all the things I would have told you if we met.
I was that kid who would basically like. I remember that. When I was like 7-8 years old and I walk out to my father, I'm saying, when can I have a drink? He's like, not yet, son, not yet. But he said, for the first time you have it with me, because I know you don't want to do something random, but not yet. So I have like very early recollections of like, this is a cool thing. I like the color.
Yeah, you know? That's so cool.
And eventually was, I think my entire group at that point of kids. I was actually the first kid who had it.
Really?
And not with my father. I snuck it out. I snuck it out from his stash only, which he knows about now.
Good.
But slowly, I think Ratko, I was like, so bitter naturally. But yeah, it's just, and also I think that if I have to ever think about my young self, I would apologize for the fact that I was that kid who got everybody else in trouble but escaped. Like I would make the plan and then make somebody else execute it. Like I was that guy who made someone get cockroaches.
You were the mafia don.
Get someone to get cockroaches put in the class prefect's pencil box. So one person got cockroach, one person put it. Whose plan was it? Mine.
My
who
God.
Got caught? Cockroach getter and putter.
Putter.
That
is so incredible. I was never as smart as this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just sit in the corner and judge you, but I would never be able to reciprocate even like, half of what it.
He's the guy who got the
cockroaches. He was the one like, yeah,
now I have to think about the young you judging. Young me is a good way to end this one.
No. I have to, as I said, apologize for the past.
Yes, always. I think that's a very interesting note to wrap this one up. But thanks, Agu. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for playing around with... What did you draw? You drew the scenery.
Bilkul. It's like Biswa. Tum dekh rahe ho ye to.
I drew, I don't know whose face this is. This is not your face. This is not your face. This is a face. I tend to draw faces. But yes. So this experiment of leaving stuff on the table has
led to
like you doing this.
It's always good.
But thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. Fun. This was a lovely conversation. Free flowing. I loved it. Yeah. Thanks for the thoughtful questions. Yes. I always enjoy them.
I think that's it. We now reached the, as Colin and Samir called, we reached the deep end of this show. So we'll call it an episode.
Awesome.